This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
To This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. It is me, Pete, and of course I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Timothy. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, doing fantastic, Pete, as always. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good, man. Just doing good. We're out of Thanksgiving, heading into Christmas time. I got my NXT ticket today for San Antonio. Me and Johnny P are looking for places down for Mania weekend, so we are going full steam ahead on my plans, because I'm doing Rumble and Mania this year, doing the whole weekend. Since the Rumble's in San Antonio, which is about an hour away from me, probably what I'm doing is I'm getting a hotel down in San Antonio, so I don't have to commute back and forth, 3 or 4 days in a row. I'm just gonna pay the extra money for a cheap ass hotel, save me money from and a headache having to travel all the time and be rushing and stuff and staying in town. What about you?
Kind of getting excited. There's a PWG next month. We'll see if I can even get tickets. It has been getting more difficult and more difficult every time to pick those up. Otherwise, that's it. I mean, I went out to PCW recently, and they're seemingly growing quite a bit. They're announcing more names. They've got Elgin coming out for the next show, Joey Janela and Leo Rush all coming out. So the scene out here is starting to pop off. Meanwhile, the scene out there in Texas is growing, but, you know, you're heading out to WrestleManias and Royal Rumbles and all this. So, yeah, you know, it's just, yeah, it's good stuff. It's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's been pretty fantastic.
Yeah, no, I got my ticket for Wrestle Circus in December 17th. For their next card, looks awesome. I guess Ringling Brothers got pissed, I guess sent them a cease and desist about their, I guess they called their new show the greatest show on earth, and Ringling Brothers was not happy about that, and so they got to come up with a new name for their show coming in December.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting, weird little thing for them to get all upset about, huh?
Exactly. Well, let's move forward and let's talk about what's going on in wrestling this week. And the first thing we're going to look at is the Ring of Honor Go Home show for their pay-per-view. And I got to say, man, this is how you do a goddamn Go Home show. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've got the written review over at Wrestling With Words, and I just kind of last week's I came across with that whole thing that I felt like it wasn't done properly. But this week, I mean, they hit the nail on the head, if you will. I mean, this was a fantastic way to push the big show. You're focused on one big match, and you got a couple little things here and there talking about the future or showing off and building some anticipation for something else. But really, when it comes down to it, man, wrestling shows are sold on the main event. And yeah, that's what they did here, is they completely sold you on the main event.
And it had a feel of like an old Ring of Honor type of preview, and we'll get to it later, but it had a more serious vibe, the main event push, and not just off angles, but the actual interviews, and I thought they played to their both guys' strengths really well. We'll get to that later. But let's open up, man. They opened up right off the bat with Leo Rush versus Jonathan Gresham. We had Alex Shelley on commentary, who I thought was really good. The only thing I didn't like was at one point Kevin Kelly asked him to explain something, and instead of explaining it, he went into a little rant, not a rant, but he took it in a different direction and talked about what he wanted to talk about and not follow the question. But that's fine. But man, what would you make of the match and Alex Shelley's commentary and stuff?
I couldn't tell if Alex Shelley and Sabin were on commentary, and then the post-match angle, they had both of them there. I think it was just Shelley on commentary, but not sure, so I'm just pointing that out. And I thought Shelley, he came across a little standoffish and a little awkward at times, because it was like, yeah, I think there was one particular part where Kevin Kelly says, like, what do you expect to see in this match here? And he goes, well, I mean, you expect to see some arm work, right? And the way he said it just came across a little bit like condescending, but like awkward and like I said, standoffish. And just like he didn't know what he's gonna say, and then he goes and starts talking about the, you know, oh, his arm is all taped up, so you know Grisham's gonna look for that, which is, I mean, a kind of a perfect setup for this match with Grisham being the grappler type guy with more submissions. So, you know, that's a nice way to get into it. And the match itself is fantastic. I mean, this is the third time that I've seen these guys have a singles match together, and they just keep getting exceedingly better together. And from the first match, Rush was playing up a little bit more of his speed, and you could tell he was a little bit less kind of confident in his grappling. And then now he has kind of done a better job of mixing in his amateur background. And from the start here, he's kind of trying to wrestle with Grisham, which I think is good. And you kind of show the different styles. As I said, Rush is more of an amateur style kind of collegiate wrestler. I think he only wrestled in high school because he's not old enough that he'd be done with college yet. But and Grisham has more of a pro wrestling slash like jujitsu inspired style of grappling. So you see the differences there. From there, you know, Grisham is kind of all over him. But Leo Rush throws some sick looking kicks and strikes, and at times he can look a little bit too choreographed. And I thought here he looked solid. The stuff looked good. It looked real.
Okay, I thought at times the match was looked a little choreographed. Like that, an example would be the double armbar spot where they both hooked each other's arm. I thought that was a little convoluted, a little choreographed. And there was a couple other spots that doesn't stick out to me. I can't really explain what, but they just looked a little too smooth for their own good in a way. But go on, man.
Yeah, no, that's the stuff in the beginning. I'm like talking a little bit more towards the end as Grisham is kind of taking over on Rush. I think that Rush's comeback strikes and kicks to the head and stuff like that were looking better, especially for him. I think for me, a lot of Grisham's kicks, or not Grisham, but a lot of Rush's kicks and kind of like the sliding and the spinning around stuff can look a little bit too much. And here, I thought he toned it down to where it looked good. Just specifically that part. I can definitely see what you're coming across. Or I can definitely see where you're coming from on that beginningness. From there on, Grisham kind of ends up looking for different counter pins, and they're going back and forth. And they kind of end up a little bit sloppy as he is looking for the prawn hold, and he messes that up. But then from there, they kind of go right back into it and kind of get their bearings and get their footing and kind of save the, I guess, to save the match, because it was falling apart a little bit in the pinning combinations, looking a little sloppy, but they brought it back. And then Rush is just, every time he's hitting the Rush Hour, the big kind of standing Spanish fly, it looks good, even if it is kind of, you could say, a convoluted move. He's doing it with a little snap to it where it looks aggressive. And then he takes him out. And I like that they kind of replaced his frog splash that looked a lot like more like D'Lo Brown's kind of low down, and there he's doing a big elbow drop now. I just think it's good to have him doing something a little bit different. A lot of people are just doing basic frog splashes now, and it kind of, I don't know, they can start to get overdone, overplayed, and just look like whatever. But a nice elbow drop can look good. I really enjoyed this match. And then we have, you know, the post match with the Motor City Machine Guns putting these two guys over, and I almost got a little excited. I was like, oh, I hope that somehow they turn and this is going to be just like a filler tag match that they throw on Final Battle, because I think all four of these guys in the same match could really tear it up.
Speaking of that, okay, one, do you think eventually that we're going to see a heel turn by the Motor City Machine Guns? Because usually when they do these type of angles, it's like usually a setup for a heel turn. What are you feeling, or are you not feeling it? Or do you feel like they really are being honest and stuff, and this is not a heel turn coming?
I'd really like a heel turn, but it feels early because they've just kind of turned face.
Yeah.
Recently, well, at least Saban did. So yeah. I would like it to take a little bit longer. But as I said, with this team, I think if you did Rush and Grisham trying to get the respect of this veteran tag team together, I think that could be a lot of fun. So I'd be into it, that's for sure.
Now with Rush, he's a big-time babyface here in Ring of Honor. They treat him like a babyface. He's booked like a babyface. But I think his facial expressions scream heel to me. What do you think?
I've kind of been on that wagon for a little while. I think that he's definitely good at being kind of a cocky asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched that mini documentary thing that they put up on YouTube of him, but there's something about his natural personality that he comes across a little bit hot-headed. And you can play it up as a fiery baby face, but I think for him it works better as maybe a hot-headed, cocky heel.
Yeah, and then with the coloring in his hair, I think screams heel too, honestly. Gresham, what's the story with him in Ring of Honor? Do you know anything? Because it seems like he just pops up on their TV from here and there. They never really do any long term well with him, but here they seem like they maybe he's now with them going forward, or what's the vibe? That's the vibe I got.
Well, yeah, I mean that was a point that I even made in my written review, is just that, like, I could totally understand if you don't have, let's say you don't have John Grisham in your We Don't Know Wrestling 100, you know, and that's totally understandable because he's not in high profile indies. He works, you know, he goes back and forth in Germany. He's, you know, WXW. He works a little bit in Beyond. I mean, so that's where some of his best work is happening, but he's doing a lot of other smaller indies all around. He'll go on tours of the UK from time to time. And then ROH is like teasing. They've been teasing, pushing him all year.
Yeah. Like, and they did it with the Roddy Strong thing earlier in the year and stuff.
Yeah, and he had another a tag team match earlier in the year. I think it was against, like, Hollis, or it was with Hollis. He had a match against Hollis, and then they tagged up, and a lot of stuff where it looks like...
Even, like, last year, I think he was tagged with Hollis, and he had a great match, or maybe 2 years ago, a great match against BJ Whitmer, and, BJ Whitmer and somebody, I can't remember who it was, and BJ Whitmer was not having good matches, you know?
Yeah, I know that the rumors going on. It's rumors because I can't be bothered to go actually watch the show, but that he showed up in TNA as Suicide, so I think that that kind of derailed his ROH push a little bit, but then that was over quickly. So he's just a guy, I know that there's, you know, talk. I don't know anything firsthand, but I've heard that he's got heat with different promotions, and that's kind of affected his pushes here and there. You don't see him that often in Evolve. I don't know. You know, I'm not saying anything particularly, but I'm just saying that's what I've heard. He works with, you know, WWA4, with AR Fox and all them, because he helps train as well as having been trained there. So he's just a guy who's just insanely talented. As I said, I can totally understand not having him in your top 100, but for me, he feels like an easy top 15 guy with just how skilled he is, maybe even top 10. And I think sky's the limit for him for just how good he is. I mean, the matches he had with Zack Sabre Jr. were some of the best matches of the entire year. And I think if ROH has, you know, got him maybe under contract, they're serious about him, he's a guy that they could definitely build around. As I have compared him in the past, he's kind of reminiscent of Daniel Bryan to me. I mean, it definitely has to do with the size and the wrestling style as well, but he's also got he's just got a style that comes across really believable as well. Like, the way that he wrestles, he can do all the technical great stuff, but you can also really believe that he's hurting people, and I think that that can get over pretty strong.
My problem is that he lacks charisma, but I think he's a really talented dude, and... whenever I see him, I enjoy him. And that's the thing, like, you know, we're talking about the top 100, and that's We Don't Know No Wrestling's top 100. Is that correct, Timothy?
Yeah.
Okay. So for the people out there who don't know wondering what the hell we're talking about. He's a guy, and you know what, he'll be in my top 100, but you know what? I can usually see people not having him in there, and I think more of it because they would forget about him, because he's not that standout-ish, you know, as in he doesn't jump off the page at you in a way like a AJ Styles or a Chris Hero or in that vein or Kushida, having just, you know, just gobbles and gobbles and gobbles, and Trevor Lee, those type of guys just having tons and tons and tons of match of the year contenders. He's a guy who goes out and has a lot of good matches, but I don't have him in my top 10 or 15, but I know he'd be in my top half of my list for sure and stuff. But I also liked the match. I gave it 3 3/4 stars. I thought Gresham was the best part of the match. I was really loved how he kept on going back to the arm throughout the match. I thought that was a really nice touch. He might get away from it, but then he'd come back to it eventually. Just like a pro's pro. Really good stuff. And we talked about the Motor Machine Gun promo. I actually like Shelley on the mic here. We don't get to see him talk that much, but he seemed like, I don't want to say dynamite promo, but I believed in what he was saying and stuff. But I'm curious if this is leading to a heel turn. I don't think they need to worry about it right now, but it seems like something's a brewing. then again, maybe they're going after the six-man tags eventually too, you know, because there's those, there's them. He's, you know, he's affiliated with Leo Rush. He's affiliated with Jay White. He's affiliated now with Jonathan Gresham. He's affiliated with Donovan Dijak. So maybe they're like the mentors, and they're trying to get a Young Guns group going. But we'll see where that goes. But then that leads into Kyle O'Reilly recapping him and Adam Cole's feud history. And I think this is the best I've seen Kyle O'Reilly doing something like this. And I think they need to do more of this. Not him trying to be angry wrestler, but trying to explain things. And I felt he was calm, collected. We didn't get to see bug-eyed Kyle or foaming at the mouth Kyle or just, you know, wrestler, you know, guy playing and pretending to be a wrestler, cutting a promo. Here he felt like very, very MMA-ish, very in Brock and Brock Lesnar, Goldberg-esque backstage stuff, or the like the Brock and Cena package from earlier in the year, or from last year. It just felt a lot more professional, and it felt more like Ring of Honor in the past, where people felt Ring of Honor was where the real wrestlers wrestled, and I got that vibe from this package and stuff. And you did a great job covering the whole entire history of their feud and before their feud, why they were friends. What'd you make out of everything out of this?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think this fits Kyle's strong suit the most, is the kind of MMA, pre-show, or not even pre-show, but the MMA pre-show talking head sit-down interview from UFC. You know, that's Kyle's style, fits that perfectly, as they have time to, number one, edit it, and number two, he can think, he can, you know, be prepared, he can deliver the lines metered and make it work. And it comes across, yeah, like, guy's an athlete, he's gonna kick his ass. They cover the history, they cover the problems with each other. I thought that the editing really came into play super well when they completely changed the mood of the whole package as they turn to the part of the story where Adam Cole has the Young Bucks in the Bullet Club to help kind of take advantage of Kyle, and he's getting double teamed. The music and the way that they think they put on some filters on the video, and the tone and the way that Kyle's talking, everything changes. And I thought that was so perfect, as it really marks the difference of why. You know, yeah, these guys were a tag team, and yeah, they fought before, but this is why it's different, and it felt that way. It felt like, God, you know, what Adam Cole did to him was terrible, and, you know, he had these other guys in this gang, and they're just destroying him and fucking him out of the title a bunch of times. So I thought that did really well, and if you watched it all happening, yeah, sure, that doesn't really, the tone almost doesn't fit, but if you're just watching this, getting hyped up for a pay-per-view, and maybe you didn't see everything happen live, this could get you to buy it. You know, you're like, oh, geez, this is real, this is important. I thought that there was an issue with Kyle kind of doing this stuff that just came across way too scripted, with the kind of trying to make this analogy to a river of rage overflowing, and that just felt a little too much. Like, you could definitely tell that was scripted.
Yeah,
and it was just kind of like, oh God, you know, I wish he hadn't done that. But then instantly they kind of right the ship on the river of rage as they lead into talking about the now what's treated as a legendary match in the hybrid rule, or the hybrid fighting match between Kyle and Adam Cole, which in ROH folklore is, you know, for modern day, is a legendary match. You know, I'm not going to say it's at the level of Joe Kobashi or anything like that, but realistically, the ROH of now is almost not the same ROH of then. You know, it isn't Nigel versus, you know, Bryan Danielson or any of those matches, but for the modern day ROH, that hybrid fighting rules is kind of at that level in the folklore of ROH. So, you know, they break into that, and then boom, it's like, yes. So you're number one, you're teasing me that this is a real deal. He's super pissed off. Adam Cole crossed the line, and then you're going, and the last time that we were really pissed off at each other when we fought, we had this legendary match. So, you know, that's where I'm going, okay, how much is it? Well, how does the fight app work? How do I get this to show on my TV on Sunday? Because I want to see this now, you know?
Exactly. They did a fantastic job with Kyle O'Reilly here producing him, honestly, because he has not been a great promo. At best, he can be a solid one at best. But here he was calm, calculated, got across what he needed to do. It was really well done. And, you know, throughout the show, they would run down, hey, this match is coming, or, you know, they'd run down the future pay-per-view. We're not going to cover that because, you guys probably all know at home what that damn pay-per-view is, and stuff. And then we lead into the Addiction versus the Briscoes. What were your thoughts on this match? You know, this is a match that's happened a ton of times. And that's the problem. One of the main problems is because they have, I mean, Ring of Honor really does have the best tag team division when it, from like, you know, where they have like at least a legitimate eight to 10 tag teams. You know, it feels like an old Crockett division because there are so many good tag teams. But even with that said, these guys have a tendency to wrestle each other all the time because they're covering a lot of TV, house shows, specials, video on demand stuff, and that like. But what do you make of it? Because, I mean, I know some people will complain, oh, we've been here, done that, you know, seen this match at least 10 or 15 times in the last couple of years. But, you know, take away from all that, what did you think of the match?
Yeah, I mean, going into this, I was like, perfect. I was just like, this is exactly the match for the main event of the go home to the pay-per-view. They did it. They're doing it right, you know? And I was just kind of excited to see, will ROH do this properly? You know, that was kind of my thing. I'm like, is the booking going to be exactly what I expect here? Because, yeah, like, okay, sure, they've wrestled each other a bunch of times, and that actually almost plays into what makes this work. The Briscoes are going for the tag titles. They need to have that momentum going in. They need to be confident and sure of themselves. And then the Addiction is a team that knows them well. The Addiction is a team that still has some juice because they just were the tag team champions and they were in this crazy ladder war that kind of got both of them over even bigger. They're a great heel tag team, but this is all about putting the Briscoes over and shining them up, building momentum to the pay-per-view. So, I mean, people could complain and say, oh, this match has happened so many times, but realistically, it's like you're not burning a new match. You're just building up momentum to the pay-per-view. You're getting the Briscoes over as ass kickers, and you're making me excited to see the Briscoes win the tag title. So I'm kind of like, how could you complain about this? I mean, sure, it's a little bit stale, but that's kind of your own fault. If you're watching too much ROH and you're buying every VOD and all this and that, like, yeah, you're going to see these guys wrestle each other a lot. Could ROH do a better job of mixing in maybe more guys just from regionally as they tape in different areas and not necessarily have them under contract? Sure. But in this situation right here, this is the perfect matchup because you don't want the Briscoes just squashing a jobber team right here. You want them doing something that's going to get them some credibility, and that's exactly what they do. Briscoes look fucking great here. Then eventually the Addiction get heat on Mark Briscoe, and they do it 100% heel, cheating, double teaming, prickish, you know, double teams, all that stuff. Nothing that could make you go like, oh, the Addiction's a better tag team than the Briscoes. No, you go, oh, the Addiction are assholes. My one gripe with the Addiction is they do too many of the middle rope, kind of they're doing splashes and leg drops, and they keep it going for a little bit too long for me, just because it feels like a babyface move, and it kind of babyfaced them to the crowd. The crowd got excited, and I think they even cut to commercial break afterwards, and you could hear the crowds trying to chant, this is awesome, or something, and I'm just kind of like, you guys really should have, you really went too far on that. But that was my only issue from there. You get, you know, the attempt at the best Meltzer ever gets cut off. And then always a great move where the Doomsday device gets countered into the flux capacitor here. I've loved that kind of setup every time I've seen it. But, yeah, I thought Jay Briscoe gets an amazing hot tag. And then he doesn't just eat up the hot tag, boom, run to the finish. They let Mark get in there and show off, you know, his stuff too. So both Briscoes look great. Boom, they, you know, they look like a major threat going into the pay-per-view. They could definitely beat the Young Bucks, but you have to stop and think, and the Young Bucks are, you know, the Brock Lesnar's of ROH, and if you want to play inside baseball, they kind of just announced that they got signed to a long-term deal, so you kind of go, ah, fuck, you know, the Briscoes look unbeatable, they look like a badass team, but the Young Bucks are the, you know, the pinnacle, so they might keep the title. So that's another one where you're kind of going, oh, that's exciting, like, I want to see what's going to happen.
And they also planted the seed with the handshake at the finish, planted the seeds for maybe a babyface turn by the Addiction, because this is the first time they've shaken a team's hand in years.
Yeah, exactly. So you're kind
Which
of serving.
I don't. They played it up enough, but I really think they should have hammered that home a little bit more, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, Carino mentioned it in the start. You know, Christopher Daniels invented not shaking hands in ROH and all this and that. But I definitely think that could have been played up more. But it is an interesting another wrinkle, and it's just, I mean, as I said, I could see, I guess I could see groaning about this being stale, but I can't see a better way to set up going into the pay-per-view.
No, I agree. I totally agree. I love the match, too. I thought Jay looked absolutely like a total ass-kicker. I thought this was the best Jay's looked in a while. And Jay's a great worker, so don't get me wrong, but something's been lacking from him for most of the year. But here, man, Shevitz, the addiction had him looking like a million bucks. He looked like Jay Briscoe, ass-kicker. Fantastic job. I like Daniels with the tope. I thought it was really well done. I thought the match psychology was well done. The shaking hands bit I thought was a big moment and set up some breadcrumbs for later on in the year. Yeah, good match. I give it 3 3/4 stars. Really good tag match to take it home. And then we get a Adam Cole promo. And he takes us on quite the ride here. From serious Adam Cole to charismatic Adam Cole to he starts losing it, but then he regains his composure. And by losing it, I mean in kayfabe, not in real, in character, as in because Kyle O'Reilly's up in his head. That's what I meant. And I thought it was so well done here. And I thought it was a great exclamation point and got you super excited for the main event going into the pay-per-view. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you pretty much on all points. I think, yeah, Adam Cole back-to-back against Kyle, and it's probably why they close with Adam, is that Adam Cole's just, he can make the kind of stuff that's a little bit too scripted come across better and really feel more real with Adam Cole than it does with Kyle. He's playing up the frustration of having to continuously prove himself to be better, and that feels like real life. You know, that works for me because knowing, you know, how people talk and the way everyone looks at it, I think most people do openly kind of say that Adam Cole is not the good wrestler and that, you know, Kyle O'Reilly is the good wrestler. Oh, Adam Cole, he's all personality. So you kind of buy into it as he's losing his mind. But I felt like my only issue was that closing out with this, as I said, it makes sense as he's better. So if you had Kyle follow Adam, you do
and
run
he's into the champ. And he's the champ.
And he's the champ. You run the risk of people going, oh, you know, that promo with Kyle wasn't as good, and why did they close with that? And he's the champ. But my problem is that he made it feel a little bit in the end that rather than, you know, you're going to see this epic coronation of Kyle O'Reilly, that you might see that Adam Cole is just going to prove himself in a big-time epic match that he can wrestle really good. And I don't know if that's necessarily something that draws people to spend their money on a pay-per-view. It's like, oh, I want to see Adam Cole prove that he can have a good wrestling match, or that he's the better wrestler, you know, like in that way. And I don't know if that works, and that might just be me. But that would be my only complaint. Other than that, like, it was fantastic.
Yeah, and as a show, I think this is one of the best Ring of Honor shows they put on all year, where, I liked every single segment, and one of the things I didn't like, they didn't exist. There might be just little flaws or little nuggets of something I just didn't care for, but it was just little things. But everything, I thought they hit a major home run going home. What about you?
Yeah, no, this is how you do it. This is how you sell your big pay-per-view year. I think it's really interesting. Just, I know the ball was kind of rolling already and they just kind of went with it, but you know, with the kind of shakeup backstage and the shakeup in front of the camera with kind of new people going in and out, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, would this build have been this good? Because right now I'm like, geez, they kind of took the ball and ran with it. If some wheels were already in motion, they kind of really executed everything about as good as you can. So I'm just kind of like, this is, you know, fantastic. Like you said, I haven't been following ROH TV all year that great. Like, I haven't watched every episode, but I could definitely see altogether this is probably the best episode of the year that I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was really good. So, yeah, I think, like, building to the pay-per-view, everything about it done really well. So I'm excited because, as I said, this might be what we can expect from ROH going forward with the new – kind of with all the new stuff that's going on.
Exactly. And, guys, we'll be reviewing that show next week, the pay-per-view, so keep an eye out for that. Now we're going to move off from Ring of Honor and we're going to move into Lucha Underground. I really don't want to spend a whole hell of a lot of time on Lucha Underground. I will say the one thing I enjoyed the most on this show was that my favorite segment was the Matanza, how he was in the jail beating the wall, and then you pull away from the wall, and he has a big bloody question mark up against the wall because he wants Mysterio. I thought that segment was freaking incredible, and very creative. What did you think of that segment?
That segment was fantastic. You're so right. I'm a little concerned with Matanza talking more, yeah. And I hope that they don't go the way that they did with like Kane and WWE, where he just starts talking all the time. But the segment itself, as you said, very kind of unique, different, interesting, and really cool stuff, and leading to a match that's exciting.
Yes, exactly. Now I'm just going to buzz through the rest. The Black Lotus tribe, they killed pretty much in one night almost. Right there, I think you have all these three girls would be a great corner, because I honestly hate the men versus women aspect. I hate intergender. I've come to that conclusion. I despise it. I don't mind it if you use it for comedy, but I don't like it in the main event angle, what we did with Sexy Star. I didn't like the Pentagon Dark having to try to run the gauntlet through to beat them all, where he's breaking their arms. I didn't like that at all. I thought the show got real stale because it was like very similar. I mean, the matches progressed, but it was very similar. But I would have liked to see all the Black Triad. I think they'd be a great cornerstone for a female division, honestly. Have those three, Ivelisse, even Sexy Star, Katrina, Taya. There's enough women in that division in the company where they could have a really good a women's division. And here they bring them out for this stupid gimmick, and the worst worker is the one who went last, who's the leader of the group, and she's actually a terrible wrestler. And this looks like they're building to a feud with, I don't even know, but Dragon Azteca's involved. I thought this might have been the dirt worst show. They pushed intergender down our throats, I don't think a lot of the audience appreciated that. I know Missy Hyatt didn't, and she's a female. So if you're trying to go for the female demographic, that's one example of failing. What were your feelings here?
I actually totally agree with pretty much everything else you have, with everything you said there. I think that the arm breaking thing ended up started feeling like it was a stipulation of the match, yeah, rather than like he was just doing it as like he breaks the arm on the, and they ring the bell like, oh, he won by arm break. And I'm just like, oh God, it's just so corny, so phony. And then another detail of it that I thought was even made this episode worse, because okay, here's the problem with this episode. It was just Pentagon fighting girls over and over again.
Yeah, repetitive. And yes, these were three different girls, but I hate to say it, they all looked freaking alike. They all had very similar styles. It wasn't like one was wrestling, doing a jiu-jitsu move, and oh, then the next one was a high flyer. Oh, then the other one was like a fat bruiser. No, it wasn't anything like that. These girls are very similarly built, looked very much alike. So it almost felt like it was like an hour long draw, honestly.
If you're familiar with these girls, which I am somewhat.
Okay, I'm not that familiar, I'll be honest.
Yeah, and I'm not hardcore familiar with them. You can pick up the subtle differences, but there wasn't enough. You're totally right. There was not enough to really differentiate them at all.
They look like a great trios unit.
They did. But for me, the match, what's going on in the ring is bad enough, but the commentary was kind of made worse by intentionally having Vampiro sandbag with this kind of, oh, I'm morose, but he's also like talking about like he's conflicted because he's getting turned on by violence.
Yeah.
And he's like making grunts and groans, but he's also like, oh, I'm still upset because it's Pentagon Dark and he beat me up and he used to be my student. And so I'm just like, God, you've number one, you created a repetitive, boring setup where it's one guy running a gauntlet against four competitors who are very similar. Then you've tied another hand behind your back because your guy on commentary, who's normally the one who's very, you know, boisterous and excited and going crazy, is now playing, oh, I'm toned down and scared. So now, okay, now you're dulling the show even more. Then you got Stryker just hitting some of the worst fucking Stryker lines of all time in here. One of which I was just like, so taken aback, I had to write it down. Two different things. First of all, opening up, he's trying to imply that the crowd is chanting Zero Merito at Pentagon to mock him, because no. Pentagon's a bad guy, and I'm like, that's 100% bullshit.
Yeah.
Then he turns around and says that these girls are hired guns one moment, and then a few seconds later, he's talking about how personal the fight is. You don't have a personal fight with a hired gun. They're a hired assassin. They're paid to be there. It's not a fucking personal issue, Stryker. You can't have both at the same time. So just kind of driving me crazy. The commentary is bad. The match is bad. The whole thing is boring. But I did like that they show at the end that Puma woke up. So that,
that was interesting. Yeah, and Vamp is in his vampire gear, which he showed off at the Lucha house shows in Houston, Phoenix, and wherever in L.A. But would you like to see these girls on the roster be doing their own stuff though, like, you know, in an actual division?
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
I mean, I like
super talented. Girls. Yeah, they're super talented, and they just kind of painted them all in a corner here and pigeonholed them. Yeah, I hate you, some Lucha Underground right now.
Well, they're gonna have to take a bunch of time off because two of the girls have broken arms now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Jesus.
Okay, that's enough of Lucha Underground. It makes me sick to my stomach, this episode. We're going to take a break. We're going to listen to one of our buddies from PWO pass away recently. We're looking to help his family out, so we're going to listen to that ad, and then we're going to listen to some shows that are also on the network, and we'll be right back.
All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack - Helping Adam's Family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back. We're going to leave the bad, crappy booking of Lucha Underground, and man, we're going to focus on some good down home cooking, great booking at CWF Worldwide episode. Man, this is a really fun show. And it opens up with Eric Andrews defending his TV title, and the gimmick was against any former TV champion who wanted a shot. And so they do this, ended up being a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys. It was Eric Andrews, Xyrus, Mitch Connor, Donnie Dollars, and Smith Garrett. And wow, I like this gimmick. What about you?
Yeah, I loved the gimmick of the match, and I thought that, as you're talking about the number of guys, was perfect. Because they set up their essentially two feuds, with Donnie Dollars and Mitch Connor having issues from their tag team stuff, and then you've got Garrett and Xyrus, who are clearly in the middle of a feud after the promos they had a couple weeks back. So you got two feuds going on in the ring, and then you get the snidely heel champion in Eric Andrews, who's hiding on the outside and not getting involved and staying above the fray. And it's just a really perfectly old school booked way to make the heel champion look like a fucking asshole, but he comes out on top. You get a lot of awesome action. Then you get Kane Justice sticking his nose in it here and there. This kid's, as you said, he's really got some charisma. He definitely takes care of himself in the ring. He looks good. So
you know
I'm just
who
like,
he reminds me of, he reminds me of a Texas wrestler, Dirty Andy Dalton. And I, who's done some tours of Noah. I think Kane Justice could, if he becomes as good of a worker as Andy Dalton, then he'll have a hell of a heck of a career. But I see a lot of charisma in the kid, and obviously they have plans for him. Or they want to be, you know, bringing him out here and putting him, allowing him to get over in this TV title match.
Yeah, no, exactly. So just this match was so much fun. Lots of great action. As I said, the booking, the storyline is perfect. As you got the guys who want to get at each other more, and they're not focusing on the heel champ and winning the belt. And you got Cyrus running and weaving and dodging from Garrett, Mad Dash at the finish, and this was just a great bit of business all around. You get so much action. You don't make anybody look weak. You don't give away, you don't have to hotshot a title change or anything like that. You keep building heat on Eric Andrews. Yeah, it's just good stuff. And this is why, as you said, CWF just fantastically booked. They take something like this that I think in other places people could see as throwaway bullshit, and they just make it work and make it work just the way it should.
Yeah, I thought it was a little confusing at first, but they really brought it back in and really had a really strong second half of the match, I thought. And I mean, I thought the finish was absolutely grand. But I really was a fan of the gimmick. I really thought this was really cool. And on commentary, I love the history. Like they're going over the length of their TV title, when they won it, when they lost it, who they lost it to. I really enjoyed that background information, and I thought it added a lot to the competitors. And I thought everyone worked hard, and it was a really, really fun match. But then the main event is Trevor Lee, Andrew Everett, Chet Sterling versus Eric Royal, Lee Valiant, and the missing Brad Attitude. Can you kind of explain the whole entire gimmick? Because on paper, this sounds pretty dang confusing.
Oh, so the match style. It's like a 2 out of 3 falls match, and I guess it's called a triathlon match, and then they call the show Ultimate Endurance built around this match. And the concept is you start out with a singles match, and whichever team wins that just wins that match. Then the next thing is a tag match, but the teams pick who competes in each match.
Yes.
So then the second match can be any two of the guys against the two other guys, and then if obviously if they split the victories, then you go into a trios and it's all three guys against all three guys, which is kind of, I think it's a pretty cool match to do, and especially with the way that they worked around it here. I thought it was interesting because you got Trevor, who is kind of that, he's the marathon man in CWF and in wrestling in general. So I was kind of interested to see, well, why wouldn't they have Trevor just wrestle every match? Because he's the marathon man guy that can just keep going forever. But because you don't have Brad Attitude there, obviously he doesn't do that. But I would have thought that would have been an interesting take on how to do the match, or, different ways that you can kind of work around the gimmick, I think leaves a lot of, interesting stuff to happen. So that's kind of the concept of the match.
What'd you make of it?
I thought that it was, as I said, I thought they did a great job having Brad not be there, kind of actually spiced up the intrigue of the match. I thought Eric Royal coming out was great, as he just gets that kind of look on his face, so you know he's got a secret, as he's asking him, where's Brad? And he's like, I don't know where he is, and he just kind of has that look. I love the tease, as they're kind of teasing that Lee Valiant's going to start out with Chet Sterling, but nope, Valiant ducks out and Royal goes in, so then now you're stuck with the junior heavyweight champion going against this fucking giant, uncrowned ace of CWF, and Royal just destroying him. But I thought that, god damn, if Royal didn't do a great job of putting over Chet Sterling in this match. I mean, Chet worked his ass off, obviously, but by the end of it, it didn't feel like a lopsided beating from Royal. It felt like Chet Sterling was pretty much on his level, and could definitely, you could see him beating Eric Royal, and he even has to have Lee Valiant, shoves him off the top, hits him with a pile driver, and the crowd goes nuts. Trevor and Everett go nuts. They get the pin, and the EMTs or whoever are out checking out Chet's neck, like he just got paralyzed by this pile driver. They make a big deal out of it, and I just like that was just amazing kind of drama and storytelling here with the opening match. And now you got the heels, even though they're down a man, they're up a victory, so they, you know, heading into the tag match. And
in the back of your mind, you think that Brad Attitude is still looming around, though. You know, like he could come in and change the tide or where we're going. But now that they lost Chet, it's kind of like basic tag. You know, it's a tag team match now, pretty much what it boils down to.
Yeah, exactly. So now they're short a guy, so you know that Trevor and Andrew Everett are going to have to wrestle, and they get going, and Trevor's just bat out of hell from the start, and then eventually they take over heat on Andrew Everett. And I love, again, Royal is just so fucking real, man. Like, I believe that he's just kind of, you know, this loud mouth street thug kind of guy who just happens to be a good wrestler. As he's mocking Trevor as he does the hand pop on Andrew Everett, he goes, "You like to do that, don't you?" And then once Trevor gets in, it's just boom, he's like looking fucking fantastic. He kicks both guys' asses single-handedly, no problem. It just kind of from there it breaks down and there's just no tags, and I start to question, like, wait, was the second tag match a tornado tag or what? I can't even tell what's going on because they're just not following the rules really at all. But eventually the Trevor and Everett bust out a hot finishing sequence, put him away with a shooting star press, and then now you got the trios match, and Trevor, loud as shit, just shouts out, "Get your pussy ass out here, Brad," and I'm just like, oh, man, that is just so – there's so much fire, so much heat in this feud. The lights go down, the music hits, and you're like, oh, man, you know, Brad's going to come out, but no, it's just – they're doing a second tag match. So then now you're kind of – you know, essentially it's just another regular straight-up two-on-two tag match. So – yeah, from there, eventually, Brad Attitude comes out and just kicks Trevor in the dick super hard and takes the DQ. And it's just kind of like, it's a very weird way to finish the match after they did so much. But it almost in some ways makes sense. Brad's completely fresh. He basically had these two guys just fight these long matches, injure Chet Sterling. And then now he can take advantage of kind of the worn out, stretched to his wit's end Trevor Lee, who's just obviously pissed off. And sure, they won the match, but there's no real joy in winning the match by getting kicked in the dick and getting DQ'd. And that's how you won. So Trevor's all pissed off as Brad Attitude has him held down and cuts this long promo setting up their big match. And I was just like, this was
while they drink beer.
Yeah, well, he's drinking a beer and then says, you know, "I'm going to put this beer bottle into your buddy's head in a way where he may never be the same again or he may never forgive you." And I was just like, oh, my God, this is so good. Trevor gives it up, says, "Yeah, I'll give you whatever match you want." And Brad Attitude's like, "All right, awesome. I'll see you at WrestleCade," and then smashes the beer bottle over his head still, over Andrew Everett's head still. And it's just like, Trevor's got no friends. He's got nobody. Chet Sterling's injured. Andrew Everett's out. Then you remember, as Brad Attitude said, he's never going to forgive you. Well, Andrew Everett also still has a tag or a championship match in his back pocket from winning the CWF Rumble. So, oh, man, like, this is just – there's so much drama and so much craziness going on. It's like, oh, can we just get through the Brad Attitude match before I'm even thinking about more matches and more stuff coming? But that's what CWF does. They layer so much good stuff that Trevor's been the champion for, I think, over a year at this point, probably close to two. And I'm still super excited about everything going on in his title reign.
Yeah, and what's exciting is it almost, I mean, I hate to compare it to TV shows, but right now it feels like it's like a episode of Game of Thrones. Like, you know, Trevor Lee could be going into the Red Wedding here in the main event, and then with Everett and all this stuff too. I mean, there's just so many, all the pieces on the board are so interesting right now, and going in, I thought the angle was so good, the setup, all the neat stuff going into this big show. Really well done, right?
No, yeah, and as I said, I mean, geez, okay. So Trevor hasn't been champion quite a year yet, but almost a year. And as I said, I mean, WWE is flip-flopping titles back and forth. You get bored with who's champion in a couple months. And Trevor Lee's been champion for almost a year, and honestly, I think he should keep it for another year. Because I'm just so excited, as you said. What's going to happen? He's got nobody on his back. Maybe even his best friend might turn on him. He's got this big title match, and oh, yeah, there's just so much going on. Plus, Nick Richards still has a title shot. You know, plus Roy Wilkins has the golden ticket. Plus, Dick, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Poor Trevor. He's got everybody. It's wolves at his door, essentially.
Yep, it's neat stuff. Great booking again. Great episode. just laying the groundwork. For, and that's what, I mean, episodic TV really at its best here. And it's just, you know, leading to bigger and grander things. That's what makes it awesome. And you know, once we get that payoff, it's going to be kick-ass. And I can't wait for that payoff. Right?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just like, again, just chomping at the bit here thinking about all these matches and even this match. Because this is the big one right now. I mean, the Brad Attitude stuff has obviously gone to the point where it's just, it's got to be settled.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that whatever, because Brad Attitude said whatever match he wants. So I'm hoping that they put some big stip on this because this match is going to be something else, I think.
Yeah, they've been building this up and building this up and building this up. It's turned into an epic, really an epic build, and we better damn well get the epic payoff, you know? Good stuff,
yeah, exactly.
Guys. Yeah, good stuff, man. And now we're going to move over and take our final break, and then we're going to come back and look at Inspire Fade to Black 2.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and we're going to be looking at Inspire Pro, which is an indie out in my neck of the woods in Austin, Texas. This show is called Fade to Black 2, and I happen to be there live, and I had a blast. They just released the DVD or the download over at Smart Marks video. So if you're interested after hearing our review, man, I'd say check it out because I really enjoyed the show. Was this your first experience watching Inspire, Timothy?
I've watched a couple matches here and there, but I've never watched. I think this might be my first time watching a full show.
Okay. And what were your takeaways? What do you feel? I mean, did you feel it was like a professionally run promotion, and it looked like a promotion on the up and up, not some freaking bottom feeding promotion?
Yeah, they obviously put some work into their production. They have a theme that they're going for. It might be a little dated with the kind of, you know, scratchy, staticky video footage between stuff, but they're going for something. So I kind of will applaud someone for doing something, because a lot of times you get these companies and it's just nothing. It's, you know, it's PWG.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's a little graphic in between matches just so that they can edit out the, you know, the music that they don't have rights to, and then you're just watching matches from a hard cam in a shitty room. The building looks good. It looks like a banquet hall? It kind of looks
like. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's kind of where people have wedding receptions and stuff.
Yeah, so the building looks good. It looks fine. It's a professional building. The lighting's good. They're doing promos, which I always give thumbs up for a company that actually has promo stuff in between, even if it's not the best. Because these guys, they're not going to get better at promos if they're not doing promos. That's it. You know, it doesn't matter. The indie guys, some of them might be shitty at promos. They need to be working on it. Because if they're not working on it, then they're never going to get any better. And so I always applaud a company that's doing that, trying to put some kind of storylines together, having promos. As I said, production looks good. I didn't notice that there's a lot of different multiple camera angles, but there's definitely a floor cam and a hard cam, probably maybe even two floor cams. And, yeah, I mean, takeaways are good stuff. Like, you know, these guys can get going. They're, medium level, obviously smaller to medium level indie, but they're doing their thing and they're putting some effort into it. So I can definitely give them a thumbs up.
Yeah, and I don't know if you did you notice who was doing our play-by-play for us?
I did not.
Okay,
no,
it's actually Alex Del Barrio, who was the announcer on NXT for a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
He was the lead
one. I did not realize that.
Yeah, the other one was Damon Patton, I believe his name is, who does a lot of work with a lot of the indies around town and stuff. They just brought in Del Barrio recently. So I guess Del Barrio must be living in, I'm looking here on his Facebook or Twitter. He's from Houston. So Inspire uses him there. So that also adds a little bit of credibility to the promotion. Having a guy who announcer who kind of does have doesn't have a gigantic name, but for guys who are watching indie shows, that's a lot of cred, you know, if you were the lead announcer for a while for NXT, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I know exactly the guy you're talking about. He's the one that
lost it in the power play with Phillips and those guys.
Yeah, and he took over when Rich Brennan disappeared, and he kind of looked like a Latino-flavored Rich Brennan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. But hey, let's get into the show proper. The guy who owns the promotion, his name's Biss, and that's his nickname. And I think the guy has a really good eye for talent, and because he pretty much uses just local guys from around. He'll fly some guys in here and there, but for the most part, it's the local guys he uses and builds his promotion on over. But he's done a really good job at finding guys and then really developing them or giving them a platform to be a headliner. Like, I mean, some of the bigger guys, you know, like Ray Rowe and Lance Archer, they have names, or Lance from Japan and Ring of Honor. He's a guy who, I think he's one of the guys who really put Sammy Guevara really on the map early on in his career. He's a guy who was really good friends with ACH, and I think he had an impact on ACH's career. And so he has a good way of creating and building talent. I think he's one of the guys who was one of the first guys to really start pushing Keith Lee. And now in the last couple of years, Keith Lee's blown up big, and he's becoming a pretty big deal on the indie scene, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm starting to see him everywhere, and everyone make a big deal about him. So, I'm hoping I get to see him live soon myself, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll get to the show. We'll start off, and it's Terrell Tempo, and I think this is a guy Biss sees a lot of upside in, versus Void, which is kind of a gimmick character, who is like, it's kind of like the mystery guy. They use this gimmick a lot. And, with Terrell Tempo, he has a really good look. The crowd takes to him like he's a big star, like they because he's been pushed pretty hard. So the crowd just takes him as a star. I like Void hurting the arm, and I like the focus on Tempo's arm. And I thought Tempo sells the arm really well, like never gets away from selling, and which is something that is really hard to teach these youngsters. Or even guys with 20 years in the business about selling. And I thought he did a good job, and they told a pretty good story. I thought it was like a 2.5-star match. I thought it was really well worked, real solid. It was real solid stuff. My one drawback with Tempo is I think he needs to up his offense a little bit to make things more exciting. But when it comes to selling and feeding an opponent, he's really good at that and stuff, where he gets those things, which is really hard to learn. But I think he with some seasoning and some learning a little bit, like get some token offense in here and there, I think the guy has a pretty good upside because the guy looks like $1 million. But what do you think of the match and then Terrell Tempo in general?
It was obviously all about Terrell Tempo. I questioned Void using so many kind of high-flying, high-risk moves in a match like this that was really set up just to kind of have a big angle finish. So I just wonder why you would do that, especially because Void did not come across very sure-footed here. He looked like he almost, you know, ate shit a couple times and almost looked like he rolled an elbow.
He never works the gimmick with the mask. I think that had a lot to do with it.
He probably did, and he probably should have just toned it down for this because it's just a storyline match. But for just a storyline match, Terrell Temple, as you said, knocked it out of the park. The one-armed comeback was fantastic. The charisma from this guy is perfect. You've got him, you know, kind of situated. I thought they did it. That's another thing that they did I thought was really great here as you bookended the shows. Terrell Temple comes out with it. Is it the new movement, or are they just the movement, whatever the group is?
It's the new movement, which is actually also a comedy club in Austin, Texas, which the manager is affiliated with.
Okay, so that makes sense. And he comes out, Terrell Temple comes out with the movement here, and then you're also, in some ways, you bookend that as at the end of the show, you've got Keith Lee coming out with the movement as well. So you position Terrell Temple as kind of on the level or building up to the level of Keith Lee, and I can totally see it. The guy's got talent, charisma, and the crowd gets behind him. So I thought that this was really perfect for that. Then you get the big angle after the match, revealing the Voids, and you know that they're gonna they cheated to win, and that they're gonna like have this new kind of stable or whatever. I gave this 2.5 stars. I thought for an opener, they both did really good, and maybe, yeah, like I said, maybe the guy with the mask, if that's his first time, was it Gigolo? I heard them calling the guy. Maybe he should, you know, tone it down a little bit when he's wearing that mask, because he seemed like he almost hurt himself a couple times.
Yeah, for sure. And then the next match, and the two guys underneath the mask, there was three Voids. One was Donovan Donhausen, and the other was Jason Cade. And yeah, and I was shocked to see Jason Cade there.
I'd be more shocked to see Lance Cade, but
yeah, well, I would be too. I'd be doing Johnny's edibles. then we got JoJo Bravo versus Cherry Ramones. Well, what'd you make of both guys and the match in general?
JoJo Bravo has just amazing charisma. The crowd's super into him. And this is where I was like, God, I love this crowd just from JoJo Bravo's entrance. They're like playing along and just really into the match and not in like a trying to get yourself over, just having fun. And as I said, playing along, playing their roles in the match. I love Cherry working the power over JoJo as he's smaller. But JoJo obviously is well tuned for working this way because he's always the smaller man, so he uses quickness and evasiveness to take over on Cherry where he can and hit some good spots here and there. The good back and forth, I thought. JoJo, there's a little confusing with JoJo Bravo as he kind of slightly heelish, slightly underdog, and slightly comedy as a little man, and I'm just like, it's a little too much for me. I'd like just to know what I'm getting with him. He feels like he kind of works like a heel, but he's also an underdog, and he's, yeah, like I said, comedy little man. So I'd like it a little bit more defined, but it works for what it is. Cherry hits some big power spots towards the end and just puts it away. This was quick in and out, and it was fun and no problems, really. Both guys are obviously solid professionals, but 2.25 for just kind of a fast, sticky character match where the crowd really made this match with just how much they were into actually, you know, being a wrestling crowd and not, you know, playing on their phones or popping or chanting "You deserve it" when need be. Yeah. They were actually just being a cool wrestling crowd.
Yeah, exactly. There's not too much snarkiness. I mean, we see a little later, but yeah, I love the crowds, both at Aspire and Wrestle Circus. I really enjoy it. I like this a little bit more than you. I gave it 2.75. I think both guys have like different forms of charisma. You know, Cherry Ramones is obviously like the Latin lover type of guy, and JoJo's like, you know, it's that underdog comedy charisma type of thing, but heelish too, like you said. I think Cherry Ramones has top of the card potential. You can see when them working spots that Bravo's pretty versed in lucha. There were some fun spots here. Like an example was how JoJo Bravo ended up upside down and Cherry Ramones chops him. I thought that was pretty fun. Bravo's working the arm. I thought Cherry did this sick pump handle knee. That really needs to be a finish. And one of the problems of the match, I would have gone even as high as 3 stars on this, but I felt this is a finisher. And then JoJo went back on offense after that knee, which I think is just nuts, because JoJo should either have been pinned or have been selling like death, because that move looked brutal. And I also don't buy the lethal injection from Ramones after Bravo had worked over the arm pretty well throughout the match. So again, if they would have just gone with the pump handle knee, I would have been a lot happier with that finish than the finish they gave us. But I thought they were thoroughly entertained, and the crowd was enjoying every second of this match. Then we got Greg Simmons, who was like a really veteran Texas guy. He's pretty much right now, his whole body is almost like full of just athletic tape and knee braces, but you can tell the guy, even when he works, like he'll have like tons of like everything knee, all like almost like mechanical, because his body's all broken down and stuff, but he still has great psychology. He still knows how to get a good reaction. Everything he does looks legit. But here we just got like the promo where he's playing like an Austin weirdo, and I liked it, like kind of a spiritual guy type of guy. But you can tell he's a good promo and shows a lot of charisma. What'd you make of Gary Simmons here?
Yeah, and he's so familiar. Like, there's something about, and I obviously I don't know him, I don't hear anything like that, but he plays this caricature of the kind of douchey New World mystic hippie kind of, in a way where you go like, oh yeah, I've met 100 guys like that, and they all kind of suck. You know what I mean? Like, and you never know, like you never completely know. You're never like, oh, fuck that guy, I completely hate him. Because sometimes you're like, maybe he's earnest about all that weird hippie shit and he's just about positive spiritual. But then at the other time, you're always like, he probably is just trying to like have weird orgies. Like, you know, like there's always something kind of sleazy, but you're also like, maybe it's just real. So it's just perfect the way he nails it. Like he is that guy. And I highly doubt that he really is that guy, but he does it so well. And yeah, the promo's perfect. So just, I think good stuff. And he's kind of got a character that works for him. So, I'd like to see him wrestle, but as you said, he's physically not there. So we'll see.
Yeah. He did work at the previous show. So it's like, you know, I'm just wondering what's going on. Then we got this, this multi-tag team thing. We got both Brady and Phantasmo versus the Epileptic Caesars versus Donhausen and Cade versus I can't remember
the Epitome of Wrestling.
Yeah, the Epitome of Wrestling. What you make of this?
The Epileptic Caesars is like so fucking stupid and terrible that it made me laugh really really hard.
Exactly.
I was just, God, it's so dumb. Void looked great, and specifically Jason Cade. He committed to the character, and everything he did stood out and looked crisp and professional and fantastic.
Should be a babyface, though, huh?
Yes, he's a natural babyface, but he committed to this kind of aloof, no emotions, cold assassin for the match really well. And as I said, everything he did when he was in the ring, it stood out. Like majorly.
Yep.
So like, yeah, Cade is just, he's obviously the guy out of this whole match who's like got something there, can definitely be a star. We've seen him, you know, we've both seen him around here and there. Definitely a good worker.
Yeah, we saw him on PWX. We saw him work FIP. Yeah, he's been all over the place, you know?
Yeah, and he's a guy who's definitely poised to break out here, has to be soon. Bolt does like a tiger driver onto his knee that just looks nuts. It's like a Dre Driller with the knees up. Brady Bolt is another guy. In this match, he didn't get a chance to, and it just shows that he's young and probably green and not sure of himself, as Cade was able to make himself stand out. But Brady Bolt, when I do see him, has definitely got something. He's Bolt, real athletic.
Bolt Brady.
Yeah, Bolt Brady.
Yeah, you kept on saying Brady Bolt.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's all good.
I think Brady Bolt sounds more like a normal name.
Yeah, it does. It does, yeah.
But, Bolt Brady is definitely good worker, definitely super athletic, and I think when I do see him, I really like what I'm seeing. But he didn't step up and make himself stand out in this match. I do not understand the finish at all. It was such bullshit. I mean, like, why have the joke? As I said, the comedy, it's so bad, you laugh and groan.
Yeah.
Epileptic Caesars get the win here. 2.25 stars. It was a crazy spot fest with just a bunch of kind of crap. There was some sloppy stuff here and there, but Cade just really shined throughout the whole thing. Otherwise, there wasn't much to it.
Yeah, I went star and 3/4. I'm with you. It was all action, but had no storyline, really. And it was not putting Void over was, like, to me, shocking almost. It was, like, to me, it made no sense to debut him and then beat him like a drum. But maybe they don't plan on having him for long. Who knows? But then why book him? And I'm not a big fan of booking somebody and then beating him. Unless, for example, you're bringing it in to say Ricochet for a one shot, then yeah, you beat him and put over your local talent.
But you put over someone that you can get something out of.
Yeah, exactly.
Here they put over the fucking goofs, the joke goofs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not a fan of them. It made no sense to me. And then we got Delilah Doom, who was one of the Nia Jax victims on Raw recently, versus Lainey Luck. What were your takeaways here?
Delilah Doom has great look, great character, great personality, cute face, smile, all that, and I can totally see why people are getting behind her. She is getting a little bit of a buzz, especially after the Nia Jax thing, and she's coming out here. She's going to wrestle in L.A. On I think either the Rise show or the AWX show that's kind of in conjunction with Rise.
Cool.
And but what was crazier is I thought Lainey Luck really stood out in the match more as the worker. She's got some rough-looking suplexes where she's really kind of taking it to her. Big, nice-looking strikes. I just thought the way that Lainey Luck was all over her, and I thought that Doom did a great job of selling it because it came across less like Delilah Doom was selling a wrestling match and more like she was getting her ass kicked so bad she could barely breathe. And I thought that was done really well. Delilah Doom does like a, I think it was a flash dance move as she's, that's yes. Like her comeback. And then, yeah, she drops the straps, hits her big comeback. Fujiwara armbar that she transfers in, and it's a little sloppy for the transfer. Then she goes over, eventually gets the cross arm breaker. I would have liked more arm work, kind of setting the groundwork earlier and then going to it. But I think having two submission holds back and back attempts like that, definitely was done really well. Like just for that, but I would have liked a little bit more groundwork. But I ended up giving this 3 stars, and at this point, I was like, that was probably the best match on the show, which is surprising. I did not expect much out of Lainey Luck because I'd never heard of her, but I thought she really threw a mean suplex, threw a mean strike, and looked really good, dominant in control here, where I was really feeling for Delilah Doom like she was getting her ass kicked.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I gave it 2 stars, but I thought a lot of it is that Doom is just a baby face, and so her job is to react to the heel, and I thought she did a really good job in that aspect, and then I thought she made a lot of Lainey's stuff look really good, and a lot of stiff and real, and I thought Lainey's stuff looked real hurty, so I thought they both complemented each other pretty well. Then we got Submission Squad versus Controversy. Submission Squad have been all over, and people, they know them as doing a great, they're, you know, comedy. Controversy's Tim Storm, which is the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, who just recently won it. And Davey Vega, who has a really good reputation of being a really good worker. I'm not a big fan of having this much comedy in my tag, in a tag title match. But it, again, these are the matches that it still got over. Just didn't get over in my living room. What about you? What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I bet this was just a fucking hoot live.
Yeah.
I bet this was just a riot and everyone had an amazing time in the building. But on tape, no, it's just a mess. And it's kind of like a lot of really, really ridiculous stuff. You got the tag titles changing on a arm wrestling match. Vega stops the celebration and then says that someone's in hell. I didn't even know who they're talking about that was dead.
There's Baird Brown who was with the he's a local worker and a pretty good local worker, and he's was with the squad for a bit, and then they supposedly killed him off. So I don't know if he got out of good graces with the booker. I'm not sure. But I know the squad on the show that's for December, their opponent is Wade Barrett. I mean, Barrett Brown's ghost is who they're wrestling. So who knows?
Oh, good.
So I have no idea. So it's an ongoing story. But yeah.
Yeah, once Contra gets going, they look good. I mean, Tim Storm's a little stiff, obviously. He's older. He moves around kind of like Frankenstein or something. But
yeah.
He looks rough. He looks like he kicks some ass. And once he gets kind of fired up and you can tell that he kind of loosened up from adrenaline and moving around more, he can go. Like, he's not – obviously, he's not some high flyer or some spry young kid. But he can – once he gets moving, he can have a decent match. And he's definitely got a lot of aura of ass kickery.
He looks like an old school wrestler, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And eventually, some brass knucks come out, and the voice of the Baron, was it Baron Braid? What was his name?
Barrett Brown.
Barrett Brown comes over the loudspeaker, and they pin Vega, or no, Vega breaks up the pin, and as I said, probably fun live, but not great on tape.
No.
I gave it 1¾ star. I mean,
yeah, I mentioned it to me. I gave it 0.5 star. I thought it was a total mess on tape and stuff, and a disaster, and all this, and especially I hate to give a match that I Davey Vega, I think, is a great worker, and I like Tim Storm a lot for what he does. He's a good hand in the ring, has a good look. He's big, so you know what? There's always that psychology to go with it. But yeah, that match was just terrible.
Well, and that's part of the problem is that Tim Storm is big, but the two guys in Submission Squad are kind of huge for comedy guys.
Yeah, that too.
So
yeah.
It outshines his bigness. But I would watch the hell out of some more controversy matches because I did like them.
Yeah.
I thought that they were a good team when they were wrestling. So, you know, if I saw them in a straight-up tag team match, I bet I'd enjoy it a lot. But in this setting, it just didn't click.
Yeah, I agreed. Yeah, because they main evented the show prior, and they had a really good match. But also, they were wrestling Keith Lee and Ricky Starks, who were two damn good wrestlers. And then we lead to another females match, which is Jade from TNA versus Jessica James, who's getting quite a buzz. She was... you remember that big picture of the NXT center where they had, she was one of the girls in the picture.
Yeah, I remember seeing her, actually.
Okay.
Now that you say that.
And live, I thought this match was good, but on tape, I thought it was even better. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this on tape as well. I thought they did a great job of Jade comes in and she's not really taking James seriously. And then, you know, pretty early on, Jessica James shows her that she's not, you know, a joke. And she's really kind of taking it to her. Then Jade is a little bit more serious, but she's kind of bullying her. And she does the kicking herself in the head gimmick. James is the plucky underdog, is fantastic. She comes across like a spark plug. Jade keeps cutting her off, and Jade's playing big girl, like, phenomenally here. It just shows, like, she can kind of switch, because she's like a mid, she's not a hulking beast, but she's not a tiny girl either, so.
Yeah, she's a girl with, like, I mean, she has an incredible body, where you can tell she's in great shape. I mean, she's muscular, but muscular in all the right places, not weirdo like China, you know?
Yeah, exactly, and she kind of, it's a weird kind of example to make, but it kind of makes me think of Scott Hall, how he would talk about how he could wrestle the big guys and he can wrestle the little guys, and Jade kind of showed that off here.
Yep.
She could wrestle the little girl, she's, you know, she bumps for her, but she's also playing monster enough against her, but I've also seen her go up against, like, Awesome Kong, and she bumps around and plays small, so really impressive from Jade there. She makes James look really good. Jade is the baby face, you know, she's throwing big dives, huge flying spots as she's able to kind of come back, and then Jade just puts her down with a big power bomb that feels like that's got to be it. Then Jade has some, or James, yeah, no, Jade has some nice looking strikes, and eventually James is able to catch her with a prawn hold and gets the pin, and I gave this 3 stars too, and I'm like, God, back-to-back solid women's matches on this card the first one with a couple of girls who are definitely local. This one with a kind of a national star, but also a local girl, and had some, you know, awesome wrestling matches here.
Yeah, I liked it more than you. I gave it 3 3/4. I really enjoyed this. I liked the grappling early. I like Jade really focusing on the back the whole entire way, so I really liked the psychology here. I loved that kicking Jessica's head with her own foot spot. I mean, that never gets old. I loved Jessica using the octopus as a hope spot in the middle of the ring. Fantastic. And the big girl versus the smaller girl dynamic was on full effect here, and they played it up fantastically, the psychology here. And I love Jade going back to the back late in the match, and then the finish I thought was really well worked and told a great story. Next match was Mike Dell versus Carson, the Texas Lion, lumberjack match. What about this match?
I thought that I really appreciated Dell working up the gimmick as much as he could, but I thought that the lumberjacks and the way that that was put together was really poor. I think if you want to do the lumberjacks fighting thing, it needs to be one time quick at the end of the match, and you don't really like take away from the match with a lot of teasing of dissension between the lumberjacks. I really felt like it turned it into where there's no kind of focus on the match at all, and it was all just about the lumberjacks.
Yeah.
Which just kind of really annoys me in a setting like this. So Carson, you know, he's working, but I thought Dell did a good job of just kind of going, you know what, this is going to be all about the lumberjacks, so let's not really make a big deal.
Because pretty much, it seemed like it was more like a storyline match, because at the end, these kinds, it seems like anyway, that Carson and Dell are now forming a team to go after Controversy, is what I got out of the booking, because it seemed like they were fighting with Davey Vega and Tim Storm the most and stuff. But I will say, these guys had a singles match that set up the lumberjack match, where it was a double count out, which was like a 3.25, 3.5 star match that had oodles of psychology, where Dell worked over Carson's arm and Carson sold it like $1 million. But here I got it like a 2.5 star. That one was like a 3.5 star match. But here I thought they did the most that they could. But pretty much it was storyline and booking dictated what the match ended up being. And I gave it 2.5 stars. What was your star rating on it?
I gave it 2. And it's okay. Just because, it really felt like the guys, you're right that the guys did what they could, but the match was just kind of flawed in the setup.
And then we got Matthew Palmer versus Steve O'Reno. I'll give you a little background. These guys are having a personal feud where they've interfered in each other's matches. Matthew Palmer is a character who, when he goes dark, he goes over the line, and that's where they were teasing like the scissors and stuff, and in his promo. He's a guy who can, if when push comes to shove, he can go to the dark side and bloody somebody up with a weapon and stuff. So that's where kind of the story was going, where the feud was getting so personal that if he had to fight the darkness to keep the light type of thing going. But what you make of the match?
Yeah, I think maybe the backstory would have helped it for me, because the scissors really felt like one of those bullshit you're past the line kind of thing in a wrestling match. But if it makes sense, then it makes sense.
And he's used the scissors in the past when he went dark and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's believable for his character, which makes sense then. Reno hits a decent looking lucha based spots early on. And Palmer cuts it off with a big lariat that I thought looked nice. I would have liked Reno not playing to the crowd so blatantly when he's kind of on building his comebacks, because this is supposed to be a blood feud situation, and I thought that came across a little shitty, but maybe it makes sense for Reno's character. I don't know. Reno calls for going for the O face, and I'm assuming that there's major significance there, because it pisses Palmer off to the point where he kicks Reno's ass off of his body. He just completely destroys him after that, so there must be a big deal about the O face. Does it have something to do with like them training Athena or something like that? I have no idea. Do you know?
Not a clue, tell you the truth.
Okay, so yeah, it seems like it must be really important, because they made a big deal about it.
But Palmer, in storyline, and I don't even know if it's real life or not, but in storyline, Athena is Palmer's fiance.
Okay, so that might be why.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a blue thunder bomb that gets like a flash nearfall that I thought was good, and I was really hoping that from there that was going to kind of be it, because it felt like they were going to run the risk of kind of spamming the big nearfalls too much after that, and then they kind of do, and I think they go a little bit too much forth. Reno locks in a submission hold that's like a banana splits with a knee bar. It's kind of weird, and then they keep kind of both teasing at the scissors.
Yeah, I think that same move is called the splatel.
The splatel?
Yeah, I think I've heard Taz call it that before.
Okay, I can get down with that.
Oh, I'm sorry, we'll go on, man.
Yeah, no, I guess I can get into that. Splatel is a decent name there, but yeah, they start to spam near falls a little bit too much for my liking towards the end. Reno seems to be focusing more on the scissors, and the scissors play back into it, and I guess Reno thinks better of murdering Palmer. Who then is able to counter with a slide and then a super kick. And then he plays off a hurt knee, and there's an inside cradle for the finish. And I'm kind of like, I hate to say it because I don't want to believe that Palmer's hurt, but I really hope that they didn't book the finish that way, because it's really kind of shitty. And I gave this match 2.5. I just couldn't get into it. And as I said, I think it might be because I don't know the backstory enough. But yeah, I think that they went a little too long with the near falls, and they kind of lost their focus towards the end, and then the finish really hurt it for me as well, because it just felt super anticlimactic.
Yeah, I can buy that. I gave it 3.5. I liked how it was pretty hate-filled early, where the strikes were really snug. And they incorporated the dives. Looked like when they did dives, the dives looked like they hurt. They wasn't like a dive that makes you pop. It was a dive that like made you hurt. I thought I liked Palmer powerbombing Reno on the apron, but I wish Palmer would have followed up and done some more back work, because I thought that was where the narrative they might be going would be. One of my favorite moves I loved was Reno hitting a clothesline backbreaker combo, which I don't think I've ever seen before, where he hits a clothesline and the guy falls on his knee in a backbreaker position. I absolutely loved that spot. Palmer going after the neck later gets angry with the dragon suplexes. I explained that earlier. And I loved Palmer's sell job on the leg on the finish, but I thought I would have preferred if Reno's narrative was working over the leg. And I think I would have bought more into that finish, even though the splatel happened. I think that's what was where we're supposed to understand is he got banged up pretty good in the splatel hold, but it didn't work for me that much because I felt they needed to. I think they needed to work over the leg a little bit more in the narrative of the match. But I still enjoyed it a lot. And then the match, the main reason I went to the show was Sammy Guevara versus Ray Rowe. It was booked off of last month's show, where Guevara beat Matt Cross and Lince Dorado in a three-way, and Dorado went to put him over, and Sammy said to get the fuck out of his ring, he doesn't need his respect, that he's the best. Then Biss comes out and books. He goes, "Yo, you think you're the best? You don't need to respect people? Well, I'm going to tell you, Ray Rowe is going to beat the respect in you." And that's exactly what happens throughout this match. Tell us about it. And I want to say one thing. I showed up Brad Wood, our boy Brad W., this, and he actually compared it to HBK versus Undertaker from 97. And I think that's a pretty damn astute comparison. What do you think of it? And do you think that's a pretty good comparison?
That is, yeah, that's actually fantastic. I think especially the way that Ray Rowe kind of played up no-selling, it almost really does work like Undertaker.
Yeah.
You could even see it, the parallels even more in that regard. Yeah, I mean, Sammy is just he's a fucking just god already. I mean, this guy is so good already. Like, he's talking shit and throwing weak forearms, and Ray Rowe is just no-selling. And he's still playing cocky to the crowd. And I'm just like, God, he's so committed. He's really got this. And yeah, Ray Rowe is just killing him and just keeps killing him with bigger and bigger throws, bigger and bigger shots. Sammy can get some kicks here and there, but I love the middle rope nut shot kick to the middle rope to the nuts twice. He hits it once and then he's like, oh, I'm going to do it again. But yeah, Roe is just murdering him. I mean, God. And he's like, Sammy is playing not like underdog, oh, get sympathy for him because he's getting killed. Like, he comes across like he won't stay down, not because he's valiant, but because he's just cocky. He's just cocky and bullheaded. And he's got too much pride to stay down. And it's not about that he's like valiantly fighting for the good. And I think that's so great. There's a really weird thing where Sammy ends up, he's standing on Ray Rowe's shoulders to drop down into a Rana, such a weird spot that comes out of nowhere in the middle of the match, and gets blocked. And then, yeah, I mean, God, Sammy just takes nasty death rows and Germans, and he's just getting thrown everywhere. And towards the end, then it does feel like Sammy is like earning the respect of not just, you know, me, but the crowd and Ray Rowe. And, Sammy gets rolling with some offense, but he just can never get going. He can never put anything together as Ray Rowe just cuts him off. And Ray Rowe working as a big man here is just fantastic. He ends up getting a rope hung kind of headlock driver thing, and then he's hitting super kicks and shining wizards to the back of the head, just showing that like he'll go about as ruthless as he can to win this match. And again, it kind of shows that he's still shitty no matter what, and hits the 630, boom, gets the pin, and it feels like a star-making performance. And as you know, the post-match Ray Rowe says, I don't care what anybody says about you, if you fight like that, you earn my respect. And he, with the last fucking words he can get out, he says, get the fuck out of my ring, and collapses and falls on the floor face first. And I'm just like, this kid is just so goddamn good. I gave this 4.5 stars, and I think this is making match of the year list, you know what I mean? This is some good shit right here.
I agree. I think it's like the match of the year contender that no one else is really talking about, and it needs to be. People need to see this match. It's that fucking good, and yeah, it was awesome live. I think it was even better on tape. I mean, it opens up, Guevara comes out, the little kid has Ray Rowe's poster. Guevara goes, hey, can I see your sign? And he rips the damn thing in half right off the bat. Live, I'm popping as an old school fan. Because I'm like, okay, yeah, that's heat, baby. That's freaking old school Michael Hayes doing shit like that. And Guevara does it. And it's like, the kid looks like he's about to cry. I'm loving it. So now Rowe's out, and I mean, he has an aura of an ass kicker. You believe he's an ass kicker when he's in the ring, and my God, he beats Sammy pillar to post. Sammy's must have died 8 times in this match, and he's just eating all of Ray's offense incredibly, just bumping like a madman. Freaking Superman punches, Samoa Joe kicks into the chairs, and Guevara's dying and coming back, and I just loving this. Sammy with a to try to turn the tide does a no touch flip dive onto Rowe onto the floor. Meaning he doesn't even use the rope. He just does a running flip dive over the rope onto Rowe. Then he goes, tries to follow it up with a tope, and Rowe catches him in the middle of a tope, which I'm like, yes! And, of course, kills him. And then he's just destroying him with suplexes and punches, and all the punches were great-looking strikes. I mean, they were beautiful. And then it was just the strikes were just nasty. And then Sammy, he's the heel, but so now he's getting hope spots here and there peppered in that Rowe's giving him, and I'm loving him because now the crowd is like slowly getting behind Sammy. Like, hey man, he is earning our respect. And then the punishment, though, is the thing that, I mean, Guevara was just eating suplexes, dragon suplexes, superplexes, just everything under the sun. Rowe's shocked. There's one spot where Rowe thinks he's won. And what makes it great is Sammy kicks out, but Rowe's face is of disbelief, like, what do I got to do to put this guy away? I've thrown everything and the kitchen sink at him, and I stand, and I can't put him away. Pretty much Guevara stuns him with the knee and does a running knee to stun him, and then we get the 6:30, bam, sneaks in the victory. And then you, when you talked about the great post-match where he does the freaking flare front face face plant, awesome. And they got to be setting the seeds to make this guy a babyface. I'm thinking the end game is him and Keith Lee, where he's finally got to say Keith Lee, he respects Keith Lee. That's the only thing I can think. I mean, this has got to be coming into a babyface turn. I gave it 4.5 stars. Loved every second of it. I just loved how they worked. They did it great with the storytelling with all the action in the match. This was a masterpiece. What do you feel? I know you're not a follow the promotion on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, but I mean, it does feel like they're building him into the ultimate babyface, right?
Oh yeah, there's no question. I mean, the kid is just—he's obviously super cocky, but yeah. Even towards the end of this match, I feel like I'm getting behind him. The crowd's getting behind him. Everyone's getting behind him. So you don't do stuff like that unless you got to be building for the big kind of final thing with the face turn, and then God, you'll be able to feel like you're allowed to cheer for him, which is going to be so much more fun.
Yeah, this match, both guys. This was a Guevara star-making performance, really. And this was really one of those matches that cements Ray Rowe as, he's really one of the best workers around. I think me and you have talked about this before, where Rowe's going to be both these guys are going to be my top 100. I think Rowe is one of the most underappreciated talents around because people don't realize how damn good he is. I mean, he's a guy usually has one of the top two or three matches on the card every time. He's super consistent, has spots that are over, his strikes look nasty, he has the aura of a badass. Like right now, him and War Machine are in New Japan. I'm expecting New Japan to offer a hell of a lot more bookings after they're showing in the New Japan League. I think they have the potential to be like another Gordy Hansen type of tag team where you could break them up and do singles, or they could go through and just run wild as this kick-ass tag team. And I'm expecting big things from them next year. And I'm definitely a big Ray Rowe fan. What's your thoughts on Rowe and his future?
Oh yeah, you hit everything. Ray Rowe is that consistent guy who, no matter when you see him, one, two or three match on the card, no question. Solidly delivers every time. Everything he does looks great, and as you said, super believable. Looks good. Promos are solid, you know. And yeah, I can't imagine that the Japanese aren't gonna love him. I worry that he's getting late in his career to finally get noticed. But I mean, God, I really hope he gets what he deserves, because the guy is just so super talented and can really work any style, any match, make his thing, fit his stuff in, put somebody over, eat somebody up. He can do everything, and he's he kind of epitomizes wrestling for me, and I think definitely for you growing up in Texas. You know, he's that kind of Texas outlaw badass wrestler, and that's exactly what I want to see.
Yeah, he's like a modern day, except a nice guy. He doesn't have a reputation of holding up promoters like Bruiser Brody, but he's kind of like Bruiser Brody, where you just believe in everything he does. And then this leads us into the main event. Yes, this wasn't even the main event. This main event is Ricky Starks versus Keith Lee. And Keith Lee gets the superstar reaction. It was like he was like the freaking Rock in this building. And Ricky Starks is another damn good piece of talent that a lot of people don't know outside of Texas. He's done some jobs on NXT, he's good friends with Aaron Solo, and they're a really fun tag team. But he's a guy who he can play cocky heel. He can also be a hell of a babyface like Ricky Steamboat, selling from underneath. And he had a really good Inspired Championship run as a babyface. But he pretty much turned heel going into this match when him and Lee teamed up last month. And we got this, which was not title versus title, but bragging rights to say who really is the number one guy in Aspire. And they had a hell of a match. What did you think of the match, man?
It felt like a step back, unfortunately, from the match before it. But it wasn't.
Agreed.
It's not a bad match by any stretch of the imagination. Keith Lee was playing more character and kind of going off of his size and being a big imposing guy instead of doing any of that kind of crazy insane lucha spots that we see him do. But you know,
he did bust off a Rana. He did bust out a Rana.
He definitely did. But you know, he can't do that every match or else it's not special, right?
No,
that's just
agree.
How it works. I thought it was kind of a, maybe someone should have said something match to match or something should have been, because it was weird to me that Starks takes the time to shove the ref to distract him to do the mid-rope kick the nut shot thing to Keith here, because Sammy did it twice just right in front of the ropes earlier and it was no big deal.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, there should have been some communication. He maybe should have done something else. Starks gets rolling, but some of his stuff is looking a little sloppy here. He's not as crisp and on point as I would like. But he does this. He's doing a really cool kind of interesting take on working the back of the head and neck area with a lot of moves that are using his entire body weight, like stomping or dropping knee drops onto the back of the head and neck, which I thought was good and
even the springboard stomps.
Yes, exactly. And it's good stuff for a smaller man. He's using all of his body weight that he can against a much larger guy. And essentially what I mean is the weakest part of anyone's body is, you know, that back of the neck, back of the head area. So that's perfect. Great kind of psychology there, as it then leads to Starks in control for a lot of the time, which again, it's another one where honestly, even though it's weird to think of the size of Keith Lee, that he's taking a long heat here. You can't have Keith Lee on top looking dominant for a long time in this match, or else it's just not going to be believable. Because there's just something about Keith Lee that when he's super dominant for too long against a smaller guy, there's no way I'm going to believe the smaller guy's going to beat him. So, you know, smaller guy figures out a way to take him down. He uses a pretty sound, logical way to get him. Keith then takes over, and I love the pop-up headbutt. I just thought that was a great spot. But yeah, like after that last match, it just feels like this is the main event. I kind of hate that. So yeah, I was just like, oh, Starks hits a running powerbomb out of the corner, which is good. And he sells his legs afterwards, which I thought was great. Like, cause I mean, Jesus, the guy's fucking huge. You're carrying him up like that and drop him on the powerbomb. He's landed someone on your legs, cause he's just so big. There's no way for him not to. And he eventually hits the fire thunder driver. It was kind of more of a fire thunder driver, but I guess they were saying it's like a tombstone the way he was holding him, which was just a fucking amazing near fall. I think everybody bought that, cause you don't see a guy that big go up like that for a big pile driver and then kick out. So that was super impressive. And then finally, Keith just kind of dispatches with him with his big spirit bomb, which is just such a cool finisher. It felt a little anticlimactic for this being like, this is the big deal. This is now he's the big dog and his title is more important and all that. 3¾-star though. Great match. And I think if it hadn't followed that Sammy Rowe match, it probably wouldn't have felt as deflating, but it just did, just kind of card placement. Unfortunately, they couldn't compete with that. And, still, like I said, 3¾, so still solid, good match. I think Ricky Starks looked good in some spots, a little sloppy in other spots, and Keith Lee always looks great. Never really seen him sell that much. I thought his selling was pretty good. So, yeah, all in all, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I gave it 3¾-star, too, and my underhearing was that Lee was pretty sick going into this match, and which makes it even more impressive. I liked Lee with the size early advantage. I understand where you're coming from on the Stark spot with the rep, but I actually did like it because I liked how it set up the heat. And I like Starks with the leg kicks that chopped Lee down, and then he transitions to work in the back, which I really liked. Lee with that Rana, and then on Lee's comebacks with the power moves, all the power spots down the stretch was really fantastic. And it was a bit anticlimactic compared to the match before, but the crowd still treated it like it was an epic match, and that's what helped me get behind it because of how the crowd responded to, especially Keith Lee. And I kind of enjoyed Starks using the scarf as a gimmick a little bit. I mean, it got a little long in the tooth at times, but overall, I thought both guys worked hard, and I thought they had a really good match. What were your thoughts on the show overall?
Overall, great show. As I said, I love the crowd. Two really, really good matches. Two good women's matches. Interesting characters. Great storytelling. Just all in all, a solid wrestling show. And I think Inspire might be kind of going under the radar. Maybe more people should be checking it out. More people should be interested in it. And the Texas indie scene in general is alive and well. So I think more people should be paying attention.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for Andy Dalton to get healthy again because he's been injured, and I can't wait to get him back in an Inspire ring, hopefully. I thought it was an easy thumbs up show. Has a match of the year contender, flanked with some, for me, I had, you know, three or four other stars at 3 stars or above also to flank it. Really good stuff. Only a couple things, you know, didn't work for me, but overall, man, just a fantastic, really strong show with great local talent, and you know, obviously Keith Lee has huge upside. Ray Rowe, we know, he's already with Ring of Honor. Sammy Guevara, I think, has a huge potential. Where I think he could be on that Cruiserweight show 205 live right now, and not miss a beat with some of the guys they have there. He'd be one of the best guys and stuff. So, man, that's Inspire Pro. Tim, do you have anything you want to plug afterwards?
Oh, same old, same old. Just, you know, go follow me at Lucha Undead on Twitter, and you'll get linked to everything I'm doing.
Awesome. Follow me at Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great one, guys.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh my perceptions of death.